And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to Around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, men's and boys' issues, and more. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Matt O'Kine. Matt is a stand-up comedian, an actor, a rapper, and a radio presenter of Ghanaian descent. Matt was a co-host of The Breakfast Show on 2JJJ from 2014 to 2016, and he has won the ARIA Music Award for Best Comedy Release. Matt is the author of Shortcuts to Glory, The Easy Beginner's Guide for Australian Cooks, and his most recent work is the hilarious but heartbreaking Being Black and Chicken and Chips, a novel. So Matt, congratulations on your book, and welcome as a new dad to Dads on the Air.
Yeah, thanks. I mean, the book and my beautiful daughter were born pretty much around the same time, so I mean, I certainly have favourites with this particular situation, but no, it was a really interesting time in my life making that, writing that book and becoming a dad. It was certainly something I'll never forget.
Perhaps we should say up front that Mike, the main character in your book, Being Black and Chicken and Chips, is the literary double of you. Was it always intended to be so autobiographical?
You know, I think originally it was going to be actually just a sort of memoir. And I decided to fictionalise it and sort of really change it up completely. Just because it's more interesting, it's fun, and there's more likelihood that when you write a memoir, it's kind of very time-specific. And it's really only interesting to your audience, the people who sort of already know you and like you, I think. Whereas I really just wanted to write a story that could be around forever, you know. So I used a few sort of key events that have happened in my life, but really built this story and world around that. And it was really great to be able to shake off the kind of sort of notion that it was about me, and to be able to sort of explore worlds and areas that I'm a bit less familiar with, you know. So, I mean, Mike is similar to me, and he's not similar to me in ways as well. One of the most frustrating ways that he's not similar to me is that, you know, Mike in the book gets really bad grades and is really sort of not very good at school, whereas I actually ducked my primary school, so that was frustrating to have to to have to change the character up in that way. You know, when you're a writer, you want to, especially if there's a character that's similar to you, you want them to always win, but that's often not a very good way to write. It doesn't make it for an interesting story, so you kind of always have to make them lose, which is a bit frustrating. If you feel a connection to them.
Well, I get the feeling that the improbable bits are probably the true parts of the story.
You know, yeah. They say life is stranger than fiction, but it's more interesting than fiction. I mean, it's not off a lot of the time. It's actually far more boring than fiction the majority of times. But when life throws something at you that is a little bit from out of nowhere, yeah, it certainly can be a much more interesting thing than anything that, you know, the brain can make up. So that's why I guess, you know, I've used those certain ingredients to really make a really interesting and enjoyable dish that is this book.
Yeah. Well, do you see 12-year-old boys, because it's all set around the time when Mike was about 12, do you see that as sort of being the crossroads of life for young males?
You still feel and think like a child until you enter high school. And I think high school immediately opens you up to this world of adulthood that you kind of never knew existed. And it's, you know, it's perfect timing because you yourself are becoming an adult. But also, I think what was really important about this story for me is that, and the age that Mike is, you know, my publishers suggested early on, very early on, that we age Mike up and we make him a bit older. And, you know, and that was purely for a technical reason to try and make it appeal more to older sort of, you know, older people. But I was really adamant about keeping Mike being 12 years old, because not just because that's when my mother died, but it's such a crucial age of learning and discovery. And to be 12 years old, you're right on that brink where your parents to you are still like flawless human beings. They're still your complete guardians, and they're there to protect you, and you know, they can do no wrong, sort of thing. And it's just at as you start high school and you sort of understand more about what adulthood actually is, and then when you become an adult, that you start realizing that your parents are not the be all and end all of your world, and that they're actually just deeply flawed human beings, just like everyone else is. And so for Mike to lose his mum just before that realization that parents are flawed human beings, and then to also have it as he's sort of, you know, pushing those feelings onto his dad and, you know, realizing his dad's flaws and stuff like that. I just found it a really interesting, you know, situation for anyone to have to go through and for any reader to be able to relate to.
As you've mentioned, your mother, or Mike's mother, did die when Mike was at the age of about 12. But the effect of his mother's death was ongoing. And I think a big lesson was there that people treat you differently in that situation. Is that a message to children who perhaps might find themselves in a similar situation?
Oh, 100%. I mean, some of the things in the book were really things I've been wanting to talk about since my mum passed away when I was 12. You know, there's so many realizations that you have. There's this sympathy, this odor, you know, that sort of wafts off you, where everyone's just so pathetically sympathetic to you and treating you differently. And it's just so frustrating, you know, because you don't want to be treated differently, especially not when you're that age. You want anything but to be treated differently. You know, all you want to do is fit in. So when suddenly people are speaking to you like you're a baby again, you know, because they're scared of stepping on your toes, or those sort of situations, they do your head in. One of the things that I was, you know, and people don't often know how to react. So often people just won't even talk about it. You know, they won't bring it up or anything like that. They just sort of pretend like it didn't happen in fear of hurting you. But you can just tell that people are acting differently to you. So it's really, really frustrating. Another thing is, you know, little things like when people say, oh, I'm sorry, you know, and people would say, oh, I'm sorry when it happened to me. And I'd be so frustrated. I'd think, why are you sorry? You know, you didn't do anything. You might be sorry to hear about it because it makes you feel bad, but you're not sorry. And so that sort of stuff, those sort of reactions are what Mike and his friend Zoe Ingham, sort of how they feel about their sort of separate tragedies. You see that both explored with them throughout the book.
I guess people just don't know how to react properly or react in perhaps the right way. I mean, at one stage, Kenny turns up and I thought he said something totally inappropriate, like he turned up at the hospital and said, am I too late? That must have gone over very badly, I thought.
Yeah, well, I don't think that actually, you know, specifically happened. That's something that happened in the book, so, yeah. although I do love that. One of my favourite lines in that book is that when he yells out in anguish and his wail bounces down the corridor like a squash ball. I really like that line.
We might take a break for a minute. We're speaking today with Matt O'Kine, who is the author of a wonderful new book called Being Black and Chicken and Chips. Matt, we always ask our guests if they'd like to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which one you picked?
Yeah, this is Radiohead, Paranoid Android.
And does that have a special meaning for you?
Yeah, it certainly does. Let's have a listen to it and I'll let you know afterwards.
And that was Paranoid Android by Radiohead, specially chosen for us today by our guest, Matt O'Kine, who is the author of a new book called Being Black and Chicken and Chips. So, Matt, you're going to tell us about Radiohead.
Yeah, so my mother died on a Good Friday, and it was 2 days before my birthday in that year, my 13th birthday. And so my dad's partner at the time took me shopping while dad did all the sort of logistical stuff around, you know, death. And I went and bought myself my, you know, first 13th birthday present, and that was OK Computer by Radiohead. Because I really, really loved that song, Paranoid Android. And, you know, I listened to that album a lot in a period which was obviously very difficult for me, so it'll always have a very special place in my heart.
We were just talking around some of the events around the death of Mike's mother. Do you think it made him grow up more quickly, or perhaps did it stunt his development losing a parent at that stage?
It's difficult because, I mean, if we're talking about Mike, then that bit hasn't been written yet, so I don't know. What I can say is, for me personally, I think it changed me into someone who was extremely defensive and kind of, I guess, scared of being hurt, really. And that fear of vulnerability, the fear of letting anyone hurt you, that really manifests itself in really interesting ways. Certainly, not just in young people, but in boys, in men. You know, you find that people often talk about women will tend to cry to express their vulnerabilities, whereas men will tend to get angry to express their vulnerability. Now, essentially, both people are feeling the exact same thing. It's just the way that our society has sort of conditioned boys into thinking is that crying is bad, and anger is somehow more valid. You know, it's somehow a sign of dominance, when realistically it's actually just an expression of vulnerability. You're scared of getting hurt, and so you react outwardly. And that's a lot of what happened when I was sort of growing up. Not that I would get angry so much, but it was more just, you know, just trying to prove that I was cool, trying to prove that I was tough, trying to prove that I was, you know, one of the kids that fit in, would go to parties, would get into fights, all that sort of stuff. It was just like that typical kind of rebellious behavior, which it took me a long time to realize was obviously just acting out from the, you know, pain that I was feeling from my mum sort of dying pretty suddenly from cancer. Yeah, it wasn't until I was about 18 when I started an acting course, actually, at QUT in Queensland, that was really all about exploring your emotions and embracing vulnerability as much as possible, to then utilize it whichever way you want, to either be inwardly upset, as in, you know, crying, etc., or to be expressively, you know, expressively upset, which is sort of loud and angry. And so that was the purpose of doing that, but it really helped me sort of figure out all of the blockages that I had within me that have since helped me really able to moderate my feelings towards what had happened and what happened, you know, and any events that might happen in my future.
It sometimes comes out in strange ways, like we were talking before about the fear of being different, and I mean, Zoe was so worried about having a gap in her teeth, wasn't she, that made her different, and I guess you were different because of your Ghanaian descent. So there are all these differences that perhaps were more expressed after the tragedies.
It's also so ridiculous, because when you look back on it, you realize that they're the things that people find interesting about you. But when you're 12, you think that they're just so lame, you know, you think that they're really embarrassing. I mean, the cultural exploration is something that I hope I've done well in the book, but also, you know, subtly and not too over the top. And that is that, you know, there's certainly a whole, there is a, not a dilemma, I'd say, but a real, I don't know, discovery or process or examination that young people have to go through when they have parents that were not born in Australia and look and sound different to all the people that they see on TV and their classroom, their classmates' parents and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, there's certainly elements of having to understand that that difference is a good thing as opposed to just automatically assuming that it is, I was very sort of not entirely rejecting, but a little bit naive or neglectful about my kind of African heritage, and you know, because I didn't think it was cool. It didn't seem normal to me, or you know, like it was a bit weird and different, and therefore I wanted to be considered more white than anything. And that's, I guess, part of what Mike is going through as well, and part of the reason behind the story. You know, like what it is to what is being black. You know, what does that actually mean?
Well, I'm wondering, did you ever come to like African music?
I have liked it in various different forms. You know, my dad was a big music promoter in Brisbane for a while. He would, he ran this African nightclub called Club Afro Carib, and you can watch a video on YouTube, actually, if you Google history of Brisbane nightclubs, Club Afro Carib, and he used to tour these bands like Calabash, and he used to tour Angelique Kidjo to Brisbane, and so yeah, I mean, I always had it around, but you know, it wasn't the CD that I bought on my 13th birthday. That's sure, it was still Radiohead on that day. So yeah, but I mean, I have such a soft spot for like reggae and stuff. Like my dad will. You know, still play Bob Marley every now and then. And I mean, that's the music that I grew up listening to in the house when Dad first bought a CD player. And, you know, we'd play that in the morning and I'd listen to Three Little Birds, you know, by my doorstep singing sweet songs. And I mean, those are the memories that I really have on memories of being with Dad and with Mum at the same time.
There are lots of lessons to be learned in this book and often from the funny parts. And a central theme is shown on the cover of the book, where there's a character jumping into from a pier into a sea of jellyfish. Is there a lesson there?
Just not to be scared, I guess. To not to be afraid to jump off, commit to things. That's not necessarily don't jump into a sea full of jellyfish, by the way.
Oh.
But you know, I think that people have. I think people are often feared of just leaping into things that they're scared of, and that's not a sea of jellyfish. That's, you know, a project that's due, that you're, you know, a project of work that you've been wanting to do, or you know, a creative endeavor that you've been wanting to do. I think there's certainly something that said about people who jump into the unknown, and that's basically what I did with this book. You know, I'd never written a book, and I didn't know if I could write a book. But I just ran off the jetty and jumped, and now a book exists, and something that I'm really proud of, and I couldn't think of any other way of doing it.
And in the book, breasts seem to feature quite a bit, you know, tragically with your mother, but also with your female friend, or Mike's female friend, yes. You've done some fundraising for breast cancer research, I understand.
Yeah, that was something that was really great to put on for the launch of the book in Sydney. We had a food truck and we gave away some free chicken nuggets and chips, and we raised money for the National Breast Cancer Foundation through sales and through a keg and stuff. We raised just over $1,000, and I also donated another $1,000 personally last year to the National Breast Cancer Research Foundation through a charity netball game, and it's just my go-to charity, you know. I think everyone's got charities that it's just important to have one that means something to you, you know, and that's just the one that I know they're there working hard, and I mean, I feel like they're doing well. Certainly, I don't feel like as many women are dying from breast cancer as they did around, you know, 20 years ago when my mum was dying.
Yeah, I think the research is having an effect. So if anybody is inclined to join that cause that Matt's promoting, by all means go to the website for, yeah, breast cancer. I'm sure you'll find it. So, Matt, the title of the book being Black and Chicken and Chips, does that refer to you, Mike's dad and his cooking, perhaps?
Yeah. I mean, that comes down to as well, like, it's so silly how you can treat your parents at times or be in denial about your heritage. Like my dad, You know, when I, suddenly, you know, my mum passed away and I was living with my dad now, and, you know, he would cook these incredible African meals that, you know, he was cooking these at his nightclub. He was on TV shows, on Brisbane Extra. He was on the in the paper making these recipes and stuff like that. And it just, and the food just seemed weird to me, you know, it seemed gross. And, but, you know, it's like, there's a line in it where Mike makes fun of his dad's accent and his dad says, Mike, that's racist. You know, and I've experienced similar things where I've made fun of my dad's cooking and then only to realize years later that it is. It's actually me being racist to my own dad. So it's a little bit embarrassing, but it's something that, you know, it's a lesson that you learn along the way that everyone's different. And so, you know, Mike doesn't want to cook the weird stews that Dad is making every night, you know, with goat and okra and all these sort of incredible ingredients that are now everywhere on menus. So his dad cooks him chicken nuggets every single night, which is just the blandest, most boring meal every single night to have. But, you know, that just shows the mindset of a 12-year-old and where they're at in their life.
With your stand-up comedy, you've said you draw on your personal experience quite a lot. I'm just wondering, now that you've had this beautiful new daughter, is that going to be some material for another book?
Yeah, I mean, it's something that I'm going to be talking about a lot, that's sure. I don't know what the next book is going to be, but I've taken a lot of. I mean, I've learned a lot in the last, you know, year and a half, from right through from my partner getting pregnant to us having our beautiful daughter now, who's 9 months old, who I can see looking at some birds in a pond right now. I think I'll be talking about it a bit in my new stand-up show, which I'm touring around Australia at the beginning of next year, 2020. It's called Solo Diner, and, you know, it's kind of about going from being that person who tours alone, eats by themselves in the back of the restaurant, to suddenly being that person requesting a baby chair who has the carrot puffs are being flung everywhere and dribbling all over the place and screeching out loud and apologizing for noises and smells and sounds of your little one. And yeah, it's certainly been been an amazing journey, but I really have enjoyed it. So that'll be all in my new stand-up show.
So everybody watch out for that one, Solo Diner, coming your way in 2020. And look, it's been great fun talking with Matt today, and as well as some serious issues that we've covered. But Matt, can I give a special thank you? Thank you very much for being a guest on Dad's on the Air.
No, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dad's on the Air.